In partnership with Kura Wealth, your digital KiwiSaver provider, the NZ Everyday Investor is proud to present News of the Money World, a short weekly show about what's happening in the finance world and how that affects you, the everyday Kiwi. Rupert Carlion and me, Darcy Ungaro, dissect, discuss, and deliberate the latest in money news from around the world. If you'd like to listen into these sessions live, make sure you follow the NZ Everyday Investor on Clubhouse and tune in every Wednesday at 5:30 p.m. Let's make a start now. We're covering off Berkshire Hathaway today. Every year they do an annual general meeting. Berkshire Hathaway is a very old company. It was originally a textiles manufacturing business, which was eventually taken over by Warren Buffett. Now it's a massive conglomerate, effectively like a giant fund, isn't it? Rupert, you're going to do a much better job at explaining to us what Berkshire Hathaway is. Do you want to just give us the lightning fast version of how you would describe them?
Your description of a massive investment fund slash conglomerate is the right way. It's an organization that owns massive insurance businesses. They've got the largest auto insurer in the US, the largest railway company in the US, one of the largest energy companies in the US. So they own and also own a humongous portfolio of stocks as well. So they are a very large conglomerate with interests all through different sectors. And their main principal and chairman, Warren Buffett, has always taken the view that, look, I am best to consistently invest the money. I will never pay a dividend. I'm never going to charge fees. I will just keep on investing money. And he's been very good at it over the long run, he's significantly outperformed the market. And there are very few, if any, investors that can say, that over a 50-year period, they have outperformed the S&P 500. And that's why he's gone from a medium-sized portfolio manager to being worth over $100 billion.
Like, who wouldn't love to have, you know, one or both of these fellas as their grandparents? Like, I know I would probably choose Charlie Munger to be my granddad, partly because he's closer to death and I'll get an inheritance, right? He's just got a certain sort of, he just calls it as it is, and he uses very few words to do it, whereas Warren Buffett, he uses a lot more words. You know, you can hear when he's talking, his dentures are falling out. There's probably somebody with their hand up his shirt trying to, you know, like a puppet. These guys are old, right?
90 and 98. I mean, I find it amazing that people of that age are still kind of with it and still being sensible about things and making decisions on the basis of a $500 billion company.
I know. And that was a 5-hour AGM. These old guys were sitting there not soiling themselves for 5 hours. I just can't get over that.
Maybe it's all the Coke they drink.
Maybe it is.
It's all the Coke and the chocolate.
That's right.
So one of the reasons why the AGM was always been so popular, and this shows how smart Warren Buffett is, so the AGM, it's traditionally held in Omaha, Nebraska, which is where the company is based. And you walk in and there's a big foyer, and outside in that foyer, there are stands set up from every single one of the large companies that Berkshire Hathaway invests in. So from ASICS shoes to Coca-Cola, Geico, Apple, there is always someone there to sell the goods. So saying, hey, we're a Berkshire company, that means you can trust us and now buy something off us. Mm. So what they do is it turns it into a whole weekend of celebrating everything that Berkshire Hathaway is. But it's interesting because even still, you saw on the stage today, they still had the Coke bottles there. He is one of the largest owners of Coke. There's a confectionery and chocolate business there. And maybe that's just what works for them. They just keep on juicing themselves up on sugar forever.
Yeah, who knows? Hey, it keeps working. But what I find, like, and if anyone is unfamiliar with the term value investor, Warren Buffett, effectively you call him a value investor. So they fundamentally believe in buying companies, buying good, solid companies for below their intrinsic value and holding them for a long term, and huge following. And people will look to them almost and worship them almost as investment gods to a certain degree. They have huge influence. And when they leave this earth, they'll probably be missed by a lot of people. But they have opinions on a few things. So do you want to maybe just, we'll talk about a few things. And I want to start first with the whole notion that investing these days, especially with the newer generations, it's very different. And it feels a lot like gambling, according to both of them. So do you have anything to say about that one, Rupert?
for me, investing, we're going through a fascinating time with investing, right? There's more information available than there ever has been. There's more access to platforms. And it's just a very different world to the world where I grew up and where it was all about you meet management, you understand the core fundamentals of a business, you do a valuation model, you kind of, it's quite a lengthy process around investing. Whereas today, because there is so much more information out there, markets are moving so, so fast. It seems as though the new way of investing is you scroll and look at Facebook or Reddit and you pick up a trend and then you make an investment. And so it's moved into a much quicker world, and you have individual investors who, because the transaction costs have come down so far and because investing is so much easier than it has ever been, you have far more people involved in the stock market, which is a great thing. However, they're doing it in a way, in a very uneducated way. They haven't been told some of the fundamentals about how to look at a company. They haven't been told about the benefits of diversification. And so it's as simple as, hey, look, this looks good. I'm going to give it a go because I've seen that on Facebook. And unfortunately, that is no different to gambling.
And they had somewhat, there was a little bit of a subtle difference in their view on it. Like Warren Buffett seemed to be kind of understanding of the desire to gamble. And, you know, while he didn't like the idea, presumably, that it was easier for basically gamblers to invest, it was more Charlie Munger who was more saying, you know, if a fish wants to gamble, that's their deal. But I feel sorry for the sucker, or I'm really angry at the suckers who are getting them to do it, which is obviously clearly talking about Robinhood. We've seen that, right? And I think that it's been awesome that newer investors have been playing the game more. But unfortunately, it has kind of taken off in a different tangent where it does totally feel like gambling.
I mean, in New Zealand, what we've seen this before, actually. So we saw this in the 87, lead up to the 87 crash, where we saw New Zealand stock market go absolutely gangbusters. And a whole lot, actually SPACs were heavily in fashion back then as well. We saw all these investment companies listing to go and buy a business, do backdoor listings. You saw a massive rise in the NZX 50 over that period. And then all of a sudden there was a humongous crash. New Zealand, because our stock market had risen further than anywhere else in the world, our stock market crashed further than anyone else in the world and took a very long time to recover. What that did, though, is it put an entire generation of New Zealanders off investing. For a very long time, there was a generation of New Zealanders that thought, no, I don't trust the stock market. I don't understand the stock market. I don't trust it. Therefore, the only thing I can invest in is residential property. And there's a big risk that if we see a similar crash, or if we see things kind of go wrong here for another generation of investors, there is a risk that we put off these people from investing for the rest of their lives. And that's what's scary, right? Because what you do need to remember when we're talking about investing is we are talking about people's futures. We are talking about people's hard-earned savings. No one, and we always tell people, if you're going to put money in a GameStop or in a Hertz or in New Zealand, make sure only put in what you're prepared to lose. But let's be honest, no one does that. They all put in kind of their hard-earned savings. And that's my big fear, is that this process ends up turning off a whole nother round of investors.
Yeah. And like my view on this is because I've kind of gone through this myself, is that maybe there is actually some wisdom in carving off a very small portion of your portfolio and actually do gamble with it. Do trade. See what it's like. See how hard it really is. You'll win to begin with, maybe one time, two times, but not the third time. And then you'll lose it, and then you'll understand the lesson, and then hopefully you'll put that to bed and just invest for the long term. Now, last week we talked about SPACs. Was it last week we talked? Yeah, it was.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, he had some interesting things to say about that as well, which was kind of contrary. You know, we were kind of vaguely fans of it. Well, I know you were, and I was kind of, I guess, subtly on the edge, trying to understand what it was. And
you just now Charlie's spoken, you're pushing me down the river and saying, well, I never liked him anyway.
That's right. Yeah. Because my granddad.
Now that your dream granddad's spoken.
That's right.
So what do I think? So to give me a tiny bit of credit, I did say the promoter structure does need to change. And that's what he's having a go at. What he's having a go at is the fact that there are these entities that are being set up to make a single person extremely wealthy. They've been set up in a way that you raise money, it's a blank check company, all with the goal of making one person a huge amount of money. And then it's driving up prices and driving up asset valuations for lots of things, because unfortunately the boring and value investors like Berkshire Hathaway are unable to compete with those valuations. So I'm going to stick with my views from last week, Darcy. I'll be consistent for once in my life.
You're allowed.
I think the phenomenon of SPACs and blank check companies and backdoor listings, I don't have an issue with, and I do think there are some merit to. I do think changes need to come to how the promoters work and how the promoters are remunerated, which I think is what your esteemed grandfather is going for.
I think so too. But, and I can kind of understand where they would be coming from. Obviously, they're competing, and they can't really compete. They can't win against against that, right? Because here this company is, they have to buy something within a two-year period. So they're probably just going to do it, right? In most cases, because they probably don't have as much skin in the game either way. So
or any skin in the game,
yeah,
most
correct.
Of the time. So most of the time, the promoters will get paid, or the promoters will be able to make money, and a significant amount of money, the moment that an acquisition is made. Mm. And that's the issue, right? I was involved once with a SPAC company in the UK. And it was kind of interesting, right? We had a massive conflict between the promoters of the SPAC, who had the options and were going to make quite a lot of money if we made any acquisition at all, versus we were advising the new shareholders trying to figure out a way that we could raise money in a way that was fair to everyone. And we actually, the SPAC that I was involved in fell over because we couldn't kind of resolve that conflict. But I think for some reason at the moment, that conflict is getting flagged and is not being dealt with properly.
Right. The other thing that I found quite, I guess, really, I found this really interesting because it's something that I'm constantly just trying to learn as much as I possibly can about, which is the relationship between low interest rates and asset prices. And, you know, from a valuation point of view, I understand, of course, you know, that the lower the interest rate is that you're using to model a net present value of something in the future, the more you should be paying for that asset. So in other words, the lower interest rates get and the longer they stay low, the more it actually does appear that the share market is actually undervalued. And I think that was something along the lines of what Warren Buffett was saying, was that, you know, if you look at it along those lines, the market is undervalued. However, that's against the backdrop of what seems to be a lot of enthusiasm in the market.
Yeah.
So do you want to just break that down in terms of that, almost like a contradiction, isn't it?
So clearly Warren had gone and read Kura's paper a couple of weeks ago from value, markets overvalued or not,
yeah.
Where that was the core of our conclusion as well. On a relative basis, markets, if you compare them to long-term interest rates, markets don't seem overvalued at all. Equity premiums have remained relatively consistent.
Yeah.
But then that's the part that I agree with you, that I don't quite understand. On one hand, he's saying, look, long-term interest rates where they are, tech companies are actually really cheap on that basis. But on the other hand, he's referencing all of the exuberance and the fact that there is a little bit of funny happening in the markets at the moment, and that he's sitting on $145 billion of cash, which he clearly wants to deploy at some point, and he's just waiting for the right opportunities. Mm. And so those are two comments that I find slightly contradictory and can't quite get my head around.
Yeah. And I guess another somewhat contradictory, or maybe I'm not really understanding it here, is that effectively he's built a business by picking individual companies, yet he is not necessarily saying that that's what we should be doing.
You know what I mean? No, I completely. So there's a something I was reading around it from a book that Charlie Munger interviews with him, where he said the way they invest, a deep value investor, which is how they think about themselves, it's a little bit like spearfishing next to the river, where you're going to sit there waiting for months and months on end, and then there'll be a single salmon that comes up the river, and you just have to be ready to pounce on it. And you're just, the patience is sitting there waiting for that day, and then it'll come, you pounce, you go, and then you just sit there waiting for another 6 months. Mm. So that's their approach, is just slow, deep value investing. We saw that during the GFC back in 2008, where Berkshire Hathaway made some amazing deals and took some big stakes and underwrote capital raises for the likes of Ford, Goldman Sachs, American Express, all of these companies that he said very strong brand names, very strong management teams. All they need is a little bit of capital to get them through. And he's always lived by the mantra of be brave when others are fearful. When others are being brave, that's when you should be fearful. So that's kind of his approach of being a deep value and also taking big stakes in individual stocks. Yet at the same time, in his will, or he's told everyone that in his will, he's directed that his entire fortune should be put straight into a Vanguard S&P 500 ETF because he doesn't believe that anyone else can outperform the markets over the long run. And so therefore, that's going to be a better investment option for his family. Kind of, again, it's another great dichotomy. And I guess I kind of understand that. In finance land, we all believe, a lot of people in finance land believe that they are the masters of the universe. And so I guess maybe what he's saying is no one's ever going to be able to do what I've done. No one's ever going to be able to do as well as I've done. Yeah. So therefore, passive management is the answer, and put it all in.
Yeah, that's right. One of the things that when he was talking, I guess when he had a bit of a spiel towards the newer investors entering the market, he wanted to provide an example, I suppose, on how hard it was to pick companies that you were confident would be there in the future. And he used an example of automakers. And I was blown away by this because in my mind, I thought, well, maybe there's what, maybe 20, 30 automakers that would have existed. There was thousands. And he just pulled up the list of car manufacturers in the United States in the early 1900s. And just even the letter M couldn't be fit. He couldn't fit that on a page. And virtually none of them existed today. And then he, you know, used another graph saying, you know, the top 20 companies today versus the top 20 companies in 1989. And he showed that there was nobody on the list in 1989 that was in the list today.
Yeah.
And I just trying to think, well, if you were a long-term investor and you were just buying some shares, set and forget, revisit it in 40 years, even that's not good enough, is it? Because how do you know that those companies will still be as good as the market? So if you were just buying the S&P 500, it seems like that's probably a safer bet.
Taking a selection of blue chips and just holding it for 40 years, that doesn't work, right? It's all about how you need to keep on rebalancing and keep on updating for the new companies and the new trends. I mean, it's really hard to say, right? 15 years ago, whoever would have thought, if you look at some of the larger companies there right now, you've got, I mean, Tesla, everyone thought was going bust. Netflix, everyone thought was going bust. Apple, everyone thought was going bust. It's a fascinating kind of mix of companies that are sitting there. But it shows how hard it is to pick them.
That's right. Yeah.
I think the one last thing I think we thought was really interesting out of it. One of the reasons why people love the AGM so much, Berkshire Hathaway has so many different businesses spanning so many different parts of the economy. And he was pretty emphatic that the businesses are going absolutely gangbusters, are doing really, really well, which I think people are starting to see that with the recent results that are coming out. But he also was pretty clear that they are seeing cost increases come through everywhere and inflation is picking up and they will now need to start putting cost price rises through most of their businesses. And I think it's the first time we've seen something some messaging from as strong as that. So I think that's going to be something really interesting to watch out for over the next couple of months of because it's the first time we've actually seen businesses rather than the markets and economists start to talk so clearly about the inflation coming through.
That's right, because the message, it seems, from central bankers has been we will tolerate much higher levels of inflation for longer and we will be keeping interest rates lower for much longer. That seems to be the message. And there's a lot of reasons behind that, but it hasn't really sparked a lot of concern, I think. But when you start hearing leaders of big corporates like this saying that this is something that is actually happening.
Yeah. Oh, look, it's going to be fascinating to see. So,
yeah. Yeah. I enjoyed his comments on cryptocurrency, especially. Like, they didn't call it rat poison this time, but it was disgusting is what I think his word was.
What were his words? It's if we think a currency that's useful for drug dealers and people that break people's arms is good for society, then so be it.
Yeah. Awesome.
So something, very, very, very strong views. But again,
Awesome. Yeah.
To be fair, I kind of tend to agree with that.
Yeah.
But I'm only saying that as someone that didn't get in very early and therefore don't really haven't seen the way to invest in crypto ever since.
Yeah. But like from my perspective, you know, I am open to crypto, yet I still I'm somewhat attracted to this old man telling me off for invested in crypto. And I don't know why that is, but I think it's because it's so easy to get enthusiastic about any one idea, investment idea, or any firm conviction. It's so easy to get carried away that you need somebody with authority to challenge that every now and then, which doesn't necessarily talk you out of it. And if anything, it increases my conviction that it's a good idea. But it goes to show that, you know, you can find your groove and it works for you. They've built an amazing business. Will some of those things will be a constant. Some of those things will have to change in the future because the world is subtly changing, but it's the same themes over and over again. So I guess the trick is to discern what is a constant and what is a variable in all this, right?
Completely. And I think that's the gazillion dollar question that no one really knows yet.
Yeah. Good fun. Good conversation, though. I've enjoyed that. And I enjoyed doing the research and watching that 5-hour long video.
Well, great. Hopefully next year we can go in person, Darcy. God, hopefully we'll be allowed. Awesome. Hopefully we'll be allowed to travel. And that'll be one of our kind of big investing trips, a trip to Omaha.
Tax deductible. Awesome.
Exactly.
Hopefully they're still alive by then, right? And they're keeping old Weekend at Bernie's guy alive somehow.
Well, to be fair, this was well done on Warren. He had two successors to choose from. And he chose the 57-year-old because of taking the view that he's going to be around longer, and therefore I want someone that can be here for another 30 or 40 years, still taking the long-term view. So,
and
who knows?
And he's Canadian.
True. Well, everyone's got to have their faults.
That's true.
Okay.
Awesome. Well, thanks again, Rupert, for that. Next week, I don't even know what we're talking about. Any ideas on what we're going to talk about next week, Rupert? Are we going to wait to see what news materializes in the money world?
Let's see what happens, I think, unless someone wants to email Darcy or email us with something that they want to talk about.
Fantastic.
And we will try and figure out and see whether we can qualify ourselves in time.
Fantastic. That's a challenge, but it's good fun. Thanks very much. And we'll catch you next time, Rupert.
Thanks all, and speak soon.
All right. Cheers.